Welcome to Pipeline Meeting, where marketers come to talk about sales. I'm your host, Harris Kenny, and I'll be joined by a guest every Monday and Wednesday for brief 15-minute interviews where we'll share tips that you can apply to support your sales team and help them close more deals. If you don't have time to listen to this whole episode, you can skip ahead in the show notes in your podcast player or find the transcript at introcrm.com/podcast. All the episodes are published there. Before we get started, just a quick note. I'm trying something different with this episode. I'm joined by Justin Jackson, who's a co-founder and also runs go-to-market for Transistor.fm. They're a podcast hosting company that actually hosts this podcast. I've had enough heads of marketing ask me about podcasting over the last few months that I thought you might find it interesting too. And while this doesn't have the focus on sales that we often talk about, it is growth related and people are looking at this as a new channel to get their brand in front of more people, engage customers, and get new leads for their business. In this first interview, we're going to talk about podcasting itself. And then in the next one, we're going to focus on starting and growing a show, distribution, and getting in front of the right people. If you're thinking about starting a show to increase brand awareness or potentially drive new leads to your team, email me at podcast@introcrm.com. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. With that, let's get into it.
I'm curious why I've seen other podcasting companies do services around we'll bring your show to market and stuff like that. I have ideas about why Transistor doesn't do that, but have you thought about that?
I think we still could if it was the right. First of all, it would require us to hire a lot more people.
Yeah.
And we just really like having a small team. Those kinds of businesses are just more people intensive.
Yeah.
The more people you hire, the more kind of risk and stress. And like, if there's a downturn, you might have to scale people back. If there's not enough leads and sales filling that bucket, you have to kind of go up and down. We just didn't really want to run that business.
Yeah.
And honestly, software is just, it's higher margin and more relaxed in terms of, we do a lot of customer support, but it's just much lower touch than we would have to be if we had services on top. And the other thing is that there's just so many good agencies doing that work already. We would rather just have them use our software. Some of them are just really good at that. Like they're building relationships with, for example, one agency that's a customer of ours. They just do work with like big nonprofits and grant organizations and things like that. If we were going to do that, we would need to like have a sales process. We'd need to hire some salespeople. We'd need to hire some producers and some editors and everything else. And he's just running a whole company where he just does that. We flirted with it a little bit. Like we're like, oh, maybe we should do that part because there's some of our competitors have it. But I honestly think it's such a different business. It's probably just a distraction from making good software. And in our case, we just want to make really good product and scale that as opposed to be really good at the production services side and scale that. I think it's easier to just stay in your lane and go that way.
Would you tilt the software that way? Like, would you tilt the software to maybe better cater to agencies?
Our business model already attracted those customers. So being able to start multiple podcasts on one account for one price. So lots of agencies just have their one account and they just put all their clients on their on that account. And it's great for them. It's not expensive to sign up for a Transistor account. A lot of these branded podcasts, especially, they don't get, you know, millions of downloads. It's cheap for the agency to host with us. We solve so many problems for them. They only have to train their staff on one piece of software. And the staff can manage multiple shows. You can assign different staff to different shows. So we already built a lot of this in, and it's flexible in that it also works for podcast networks. It also works for a company like IBM that would have multiple shows under one account. And it works for an individual creator that might have multiple shows. So the software in that case was really flexible. I was just at a conference and I spoke with an agency owner and he's one of our longest running customers. They're great customers. And so getting his feedback, I'm definitely listening when he's giving us feedback because making those customers happy, like they sign up and they start using us. And if they like the software, that they'll just be like, we are using this forever. And we're just going to put, we're going to transfer all shows on competing products over to us. Talking to those customers and listening to how they're using us and kind of discerning where the opportunities and gaps are that we could fill. That's the game from my perspective, is to just make the product really fit their way of doing things and help them to make more money and help them to make happier clients and all that kind of stuff. That's probably strategically where we want to go.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about growth then, like, is this Transistor's website thing to me is really interesting because it feels really polished for, mm-hmm. you know, having used Transistor for a bit and had a podcast that was,
yeah,
that had a Transistor site and now seeing where it's growing.
Yeah.
To me, it feels like just from the outside, like a little bit of like a horizontal exploration of, okay, yeah. What if we continue to be a software company, but we sort of look at this adjacent space next to podcasts?
I think in that case, it was like we were already really, podcast hosting is very much like the web hosting market. And if you're in the web hosting market, you're at least tangentially involved in the CMS market. And really, podcasting, especially from the beginning, we had a CMS. We have a page where you're creating an episode and you have to put in title, and then you have to add some media, like an MP3 file, and you have to add an image, and then you have to write out a bunch of content, and you have to click publish. So it's already a CMS. And it was like, well, how can we take this and offer something that people want already, which is a website for their podcast? It's already a best practice. And then we experimented with, like, maybe this could be a way of acquiring customers, which is to make that available to anybody with a podcast, whether you're hosted on Transistor or not. That experiment's been okay. Like, I thought we were going to get thousands of people using it right off the bat. And I think we're still, like, maybe 300 people have created a site so far. So maybe that's one of those experiments that, no, 215. So it's pretty low. Might be one of those experiments, marketing experiments, where it's just going to take time to get the word out, get the search traffic, all that stuff. It was also the most embarrassing thing about Transistor for a long time, is that the website stuff wasn't as good as it could have been. It was like something that John, my partner, built really quick for our first customer. And then we just kept it for 2 years. I was like, we got to get rid of this. This is like, we got to improve on this. So I don't think we would ever, like, Libsyn, which is one of our competitors, they also have a actual web hosting and website CMS platform. I don't think we'll do that. It's so hard to be in our lane already. And I want us to keep growing, but I want us to keep growing at 10, 15% revenue every year. That's kind of the ideal. We don't need, in terms of scale, once we hit $1 million in annual revenue, that was already kind of like enough, in a sense of, this will give us and our team a good life and good salaries and everything else. And I want to keep growing, because 10, 15% a year feels, that's like nice. That's like a nice, healthy growth trajectory. But we're not looking to grow by, you know, 2x and 3x and 4x every year. It also just feels cancerous to me. It's like, that kind of growth is just like not healthy. I don't think it produces like healthy teams. In the beginning, you need to grow by those numbers, because you want to hit $1 million a year in revenue for a small team, or 2 million or whatever. Podcasting as a market has a ceiling. We're always going to hit up against, I think, like, in terms of like podcasts that have been updated in the last month, even though there's 4.5 million podcasts out there, I think that updated in the last month is like 150,000 or something like that. Hmm. We're talking about a small market. I mean, even 4 million or 4.5 million podcasts total is small. There's like, I don't know, 50, 60, 100 million YouTube channels, and probably 600 million blogs or something like that. Podcasting is still tiny. And so that's going to affect our potential for growth. Is Transistor going to be a $1 billion revenue business in 5 years, there's no way. There's just no way that that's going to happen. The entire advertising portion of the podcast market is only $1 billion a year. That's like that entire category is only $1 billion. So yeah, if we wanted to grow crazy, we would have to go into like website hosting and services and all this other stuff. But this category has a high enough ceiling that still every year grows about 10-15% a year that it's like, that's perfect. Let's just stay there. Venture capitalists are coming into podcasting and big publicly traded companies like Spotify are coming into podcasting and they want to grow it big. They want to blow the roof off of it. For them, 10-15% growth a year is not good enough. And the total market size is not good enough for them. They want big, big numbers. They want there to be 500 million podcasts or 60 million podcasts or whatever. And for an indie company, we don't need that. We just need the pie to be big enough for us to have a reasonable income and pay our people well and have a good life.
I feel like some of these bigger companies are trying to sort of edge out RSS standard.
Oh yeah, they are.
That feels like a consolidation move a little bit, right? Of like, okay, yeah. Well, maybe there is a ceiling here. So maybe we should start trying to just capture more of this market that's maybe smaller than we thought. And then we can extract more later when we control it.
Yeah, I think they want both. I mean, for sure, if podcasting was centralized the way that YouTube is centralized, and I mean, YouTube is also a big podcast player now, for sure, it would be bigger in the sense that there would be more shows, there would be more people creating shows. Centralization in tech does create that effect. They would grow it just by centralizing it. I don't think that's good for society. On the other hand, I'm like, for sure they would love to do that. Like YouTube, that was YouTube's, before YouTube came along, there was iFilm and Atom Films and a bunch of smaller video hosting platforms. And after YouTube started, there was Vimeo and Wistia and some other ones that have done okay. But YouTube loves owning the whole video stack. That's amazing for them and for Google. Every big multinational megacorp wants this. They want total dominance. They want to dominate everything. It's the same way Microsoft wanted every computer to be running MS-DOS and Windows eventually, right? That's the game. If you own everything, then yeah, you can extract massive profits. That's why we have monopoly laws, right? They want that stuff for sure, but I don't think it's healthy for society. So RSS is a lot more mess in terms of now when someone publishes a podcast RSS feed, they have to submit it to multiple directories and apps like Apple and Spotify and Google and Amazon and Overcast and Pocket Cast. Like that's messier, but the benefit you get for that mess is actually substantial, meaning no one organization or entity owns this thing in the same way that nobody owns email. We're not paying Microsoft postage fee every time we send or receive an email. It's an open protocol that's kind of owned by society. Same with TCP/IP. It's like every time you send a packet of data over the internet, you're not paying some, party to gatekeeper to like let it through. It's free flowing, and it could have gone another way, but that's not the way it worked. We have these open shared protocols that anyone can use. In the case of the internet, I think we really need those things. And in case of indie businesses building on top of those protocols, they're awesome for indie businesses. Some of the biggest bootstrap companies have been built on top of email. Mailchimp, ConvertKit, UserList, CustomerList, Customer.io, Campaign Monitor. These are all bootstrapped companies or that were bootstrapped companies. And why? Because email is open. It's an open protocol. It gives a spot for independents to compete. Whereas that was a lot harder in something like search. Google just owns that category. And even a massive company like Microsoft, their best effort is like maybe 3-6% of that market.
That's all for now. You can find show notes at introcrm.com/podcast. The theme music for Pipeline Meeting is by Neighborhood Vandal. If you learned something, consider sharing this show with a friend. Thanks for listening.